over my soul, sweet Spirit, sweep o'er my soul. My joy is complete when at His feet, sweet Spirit, sweep o'er my soul. We've been going through the book of Job, and you know, the language in the book of Job is different than any other language in the Bible. It is so figurative, it's so flowery, it's so profound, and sometimes it's very hard to be understood. But Eliphaz is the still one talking. You know, they sat and Job spoke, and then Eliphaz, he's still talking. He started talking in chapter 4, and here we are. He's still talking, Eliphaz is. And let's start in verse 17 and go down through verse 27. And hopefully God will enable me to say some things about this. And this is my subject. This is the title of my message. Behold, happy is the man. Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. For he maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth and his hands make whole. He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles. Yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee. In famine he shall redeem thee from death. And in war from the power of the sword. Thou shalt be hid from the scourge of the tongue. Neither shalt thou be afraid of destruction when it cometh. At destruction and famine shalt thou laugh. Thou shalt not be afraid of the beast of the earth. For thou shalt be in league with the stones of the field, and the beast of the field shall be at peace with thee. And thou shalt know that thy tabernacle shall be in peace, and thou shalt visit thy habitation, and thou shalt not sin. Thou shalt know also that thy seed shall be great, and thine offspring as the grass of the earth. Thou shalt come to thy grave in a full age, like as a shock of corn cometh in his season. Lo, this we have searched it, so it is, hear and know thou it for thy good. Happy is the man. Eliphaz is still talking, he's expressing his view. And you remember, he's talking to Job. He's talking to Job and those other men. And he's feel like God's chastening Job, and that if Job was like he ought to be, all these things would not bother him. But here he's view of man's suffering and affliction in God's hand. Like I said, that language of Job is no place else found anywhere else like it in the Bible. It's so expressive. But I want you to look there in verse 17. It says, behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Suffering and affliction and correction, however it may come to God's people, it's a blessing. He said, a man that God corrects, a man that God chastens, he said, that's a blessing. That man will be happy. He'll be a happy man. He'll be a happy man. Behold, a man whom the Lord correcteth. There may come lots and lots of different causes, different sources. There's all kinds of second causes. He says there in verse 19, here he talks about, he shall deliver thee in 6 troubles. 6 troubles. And when the 7th cometh, he said, no evil is going to touch you. So he's talking automatically right off the bat that there's at least 7 troubles. 7 troubles. And that's what he's talking about. The 7 troubles. 6 and 7 troubles. That, you know, the correction and the chastisement and the suffering may come from a lot of second causes. And you know, one of them, he said, I'll even save you in famine. Famine is a trouble. He says there in verse 20, famine he shall redeem thee. And war, he's talking about war. War is trouble. War is trouble. Well, especially when you have trouble within your own heart. And all have trouble. And then he says about the wild beast down there in verse 23. He says, the wild beast and the stones. He said, they won't even hurt you. They're the field, they won't hurt you. Human suffering comes from lots and lots and lots of different sources. They come from things within us, come from things within us, and they come from things without us. But he said, happy is the man. And this is strange. He said, afflicted man, a chastened man, a corrected man. This is strange and afflicted, yet he says he's a happy man. He's a happy man. Now, the natural mind can't get this. And whom God corrects, and whom God corrects, and the scriptures given by inspiration of God is proper doctrine, reproof, for correction. And instruction in righteousness. God uses His Word. He uses so many things to correct us. And if anybody don't think they need correcting, I feel sorry for them. Because you think about being corrected. Look at how much did we need to be corrected from the doctrine we once believed, from the life we led, from our rebellion and our enmity. Oh, God corrects us. And every afflicted man isn't happy. Many of people, when they're afflicted, they're miserable. Miserable. And I tell you, they don't like correction. But if our corrections, if they come from God, they're a great, great blessing. But if they don't come from God, they'll just be poison instead of a blessing. I can tell you time, and I can vividly, vividly remember several times that God Himself has corrected me. I've been in services where somebody just get up and read the Bible. And God correct me in the reading of the Word because of my attitude in my mind, my attitude toward myself, my attitude toward my preaching. God has taken His Word and just stood up and somebody read it and put me in my place. God just exposed me like I hope nobody sees what's going on right now with me in my mind, in my heart, where God, just because God sent His Word to straighten me out. Correct me to straighten out. Straighten out. And I tell you, troubles in themselves, they're grievous. They're so grievous. But all to have the presence and blessing of God in it and through it, that's what gives the happiness. That's what gives the blessing. Now you keep Job and look over with me in Hebrews chapter 12. Look at Hebrews chapter 12. Oh, I tell you, beloved, God corrects us. And if I'm wrong, I want to be corrected. Oh, my soul, correct me. Don't let me. Please. And he said, happy is that man that God created. What a blessing for God to pay enough. You know, you correct your children. You don't want your children to grow up to be mean and ugly and be disrespectful. You want them to grow up to be respectful. You want them to grow up to know how to work, how to make a living, how to do things, to be respectful, to be able a good provider. You correct your children when they're growing up. Well, if we do that to our earthly children, imagine what God does for His heavenly children. And I tell you, look what it says here in Hebrews 12 and verse 11. Now chastening for the present seemeth to be that now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Grievous. You know, when God sends trouble and He sends correction, and He chastens us and puts the rod on our back, puts the rod in our soul, it's grievous while it's going on. It is terribly, terribly grievous. But look what He says. Nevertheless, after it's over and done with, you know what it'll do? It'll yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that God does it to. You know, if you ever got on your children, and they go off and sit and take a while, and then after you've corrected them real good And then they'll come and crawl right back in your lap and just crawl up in your lap and say, look up at you, I'm sorry. we've all had that with our children. And that's what the Lord said. When he's doing it, and I tell you and I've said this before, the easiest way for God to chastise his children is withdraw his presence. Just withdraw his presence when you're in a service and let you go about 5 or 6 services or 10 or 12 days and not feel his presence. Not be able to read the word. It's a shut book to you. The heavens are brass. You can't think. You can't feel. You can't enjoy. He just shuts the door on you. Now that's one of the grievousest things you'll ever go through. But that's all God's got to do to us. Say, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go 6 services and not have my presence. And you know what you'll do after every service? You'll sit to every service you come to. You'll sit there and say, oh Lord, please, please do something for me. Please don't let me be like this. Please let me hear. Please let me feel. Please touch me. Because I'm telling you, it's grievous. But after it's over and done with, peace comes down here. Rest comes down. And God blesses us. And then look what he said here in Hebrews 12 in verse 5 and 6. And you know, we're still over at Hebrews. Let me show you this in Hebrews 12. Look what he says in verse 5 and 6 here. He says, as ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as children. You know, you forgot that God's talking to you and exhorting you as children. My son, he's talking to us as children now. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. Oh, God rebuke us? Yeah. For whom the... And listen, and I'll tell you what, he uses men sometimes. I've had some men rebuke me pretty good. I've had some preachers rebuke me pretty good. I've had God to rebuke me. I've had the scriptures to rebuke me. And it'll do it. It'll do it. But look what he goes on to say. For whom the Lord loveth. That's the key right there. Whom the Lord loves, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If you're one of his children and he receives you, he's going to correct you. He's going to teach you. He's going to instruct you. And look what he says. And if you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? Huh? Oh my. So I tell you, that's what he's talking about. Happy is the man whom the Lord correcteth. And I tell you, when it's going on, it's not. It don't feel very good. But chastening's for children. He said, you know, if you don't endure chastening, that means you're a bastard, not a son. That's what he's talking about. That's what he said. And then look what he said. He'll redeem back over in Job. Look what he said here in verse 18 through 20 now. This is what we're talking about. You know, for he make a sore. But oh, when he makes you sore, he'll turn around and bind it up. He'll redeem us from affliction. He said, he shall deliver thee in 6 troubles. Oh my, 6 troubles? And he said, yeah, when 7 comes, he said, I'll be right there to save you again. I'll make you whole. He said, I'll make you sore, and then I'll wound you. He said, I'll wound you there in verse 18. I'll wound you. And then you know what I'll do? I'll take my hand and I'll make you whole again. I'll make your heart bleed and then I'll heal it. I'll make your soul hurt and then I'll heal it. And then look what he goes on to say. He said, yeah, he'll deliver thee in 6 troubles. In all possible troubles. That, you know, when he's talking about 6 and 7, 6 is man's number. Man was created on the 6th day. And 7 is for perfection. So whether we're 6 as man, we're in trouble, and we have 6 troubles, but when it's a And God said in the Sabbath, in that perfect, when it's made perfect, he said, I'll save you in those troubles. I'll save you in those troubles. And I want you to look with me over here in Psalm 34. Look at a few verses of scripture with me in Psalm 34. Look with me in verse 6, Psalm 34, 6. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and listen to this, and saved him out of all his troubles. Or saved him out of his troubles. Look down verse 15. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. Look down verse 17. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. Down verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of all of them. So I tell you, whatever's going on, the Lord's doing it, and I'm thankful for it. But I'll tell you something else. These troubles, these trials, these afflictions that God corrects us, that happy is the man, they're just temporary. They're just temporary. There'll always be an end to them. In His time, He'll save us from our troubles. He'll save us from our troubles. He makes us sore, He binds up, He wounds and He heals. And then look what He said here in verse 21. He said, you know, He'll guard His people. He guards His people, even their affliction and their troubles. He said, thou shalt be hid from the scourge of the tongue. Neither shalt thou be afraid of destruction when it cometh. Now, I'll tell you what, He guards His people. He says, you know, He said, I'm going to hide you. And you know, He's talking about the scourge of the tongue. And when you look over in the margin, it says, when the torn tongue scourgeth. Now, you know, the tongue is the worst member we got in our body. It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing in our body. We use it, we can use it to praise God, but we use it for so many things beside that. Now, when it says scourge, and that means we old-fashioned way of saying it's tongue lashing. A tongue lashing. Get a good tongue lashing. Now, I've gave a few good tongue lashings in my time as a preacher. I read an article where, you know, when a young preacher, he's got a little sense, but he's got more vinegar than he does grace. Then as he gets older, he has a little more honey in it. But I've scourged. There's been men and women that I've scourged with my tongue. And it's very hard for people to get over that. You know, somebody gives you a good tongue lashing, and I mean just rakes you over the coals with their tongue, it's hard to get over it. But I've had lots of tongue lashings. I've been scourged a lot but over the years with people with their tongues. I've been scourged. I've been scourged by young men. I've been scourged by old men. I've been scourged by women. I've been scourged by men. I've been scourged by unconverted people. I've been scourged by old preachers and young preachers. And you know what? God said, I'll hide you from that. And let me tell you something about that. Whenever we let this tongue get away from us and we say things and lash people with it and hurt people with it, here's the thing we ought to do about it. And I'm talking about myself especially. We ought to, first and more foremost, when we do it, go to Him and say, I'm sorry. I am truly, truly sorry. Please forgive me. And secondly, Never act like you. That always treat them exactly the same. Love them. Charity covers a multitude of sin. And I would love that people would treat me that way as I would treat them. Is, you know, charity, love covers a multitude of sin. If somebody rakes you over the coals and gives you a tongue lashing, charity covers a multitude of sin. I remember so well, I've told you this before. I was at Brother Henry Mahan's house, and they'd been up there in a meeting. And we were sitting around in his living room. We were sitting talking, us and several preachers. And Henry got to talking to me about preaching. About preaching. And he said some things to hopefully help me in my preaching. And there was a couple other preachers there, and they thought, because Henry was talking to me about preaching, they thought, well, I'll just pile on. And they start telling me, well, you need to do this, and you need to do it that way, and you need to do it this other way, and you need to do this and not do that and not do it. And I mean, they really piled on. And I got home. I cried just about all the way to the house. Driving from Ashland. I got home and I was in the shower. And I was standing in the shower crying over that. It just broke my heart. Just broke my heart. I didn't know preachers felt that way about me and would try to straighten me out that much, you know. And it just broke my heart. And I got home. 3 days later, I got a letter from Henry. Henry said, "Brother Donnie," he said, "I'm afraid I hurt your feelings. And I am so sorry. I wouldn't do it for nothing. I love you. I love you. I love you. But them other preachers didn't do that. But Henry did." And that's what love does. It covers a multitude of sin. And God help us to do that. That's what, you know, when God chastises us, people say, "Well, I believe the Lord's trying to teach me." No, no. If God's going to correct you and teach you, you're going to get your correction. You're going to get taught. You're going to get taught. And God guards you. He hides them from the tongue. And then he said, look here, said, and down in verse, and he said in verse 21, "And neither shalt thou be afraid of destruction when it comes." Destruction. You won't be afraid of it. I mean, that's destruction all around us now. You know, when destruction comes and things start falling apart, that's what he's talking about. When things start falling apart, destruction comes. He said, you won't be afraid. You won't be afraid. Huh? Just temporary, just temporary. Oh, my. He said, and when famine comes, you'll laugh at that. You'll just laugh at it. Not be afraid at it. In verse 22, he said, "And destruction and famine thou shalt laugh." Now, I think he's trying to correct Job here and talk to Job. But these are good things for us to pay attention to. And he says, "You'll not be afraid of the beast of the earth." You know, it's when Daniel was in the lion's den. He never, you know, you don't find him said, "Now, oh, king, don't put me in there. Don't put me in there with them lions. Them lions will eat me up. Them lions are mean. They're ferocious. They're fierce. They'll destroy me." Daniel said, "Well, my God will deliver me." And he said, "The angel of the Lord come and shut the mouth." And when Paul talked about fighting with beasts in Ephesus, fighting with lions and fighting with beasts in Ephesus, he wasn't talking about four-footed beasts. He was talking about men beasts, people who act beastly, people who act beastly toward the gospel, act beastly toward the word of God. And I'll tell you, that said, "You'll not be afraid of the beast," and God shut the mouths of the lions. And then look what he said in verse 23. God blesses his people in afflictions and in troubles. He said, verse 23, "For thou shalt be in league with the stones of the field." Oh, my. "And the beasts of the field shall be at peace with you." They're going to be at peace with you. Oh my. What he, you know what he's saying here? God won't even let the stones hurt you. God won't let the stones hurt you. The stones of the field, you'll be in league with me. You know, you'll walk through them, walk on them, and they won't hurt you. And the beasts of the field, you'll be at peace with them. You know, stones won't, what he's talking about, stones won't keep you from prospering. God can do us good by anything, and nothing can do good for us without him. Now let me show you an illustration about stoning. And stones won't hurt you. They stoned Stephen to death. They picked up stones. And when we're talking about stones, we're not talking about picking up rocks that you shoot in slingshots. We're talking about picking up big stones like this. That's what they beat men with. The biggest stones they could find, that's what they would throw. And they just keep throwing them until they're on the ground and just keep throwing them on top of them and throwing them on top of them until they're crushed and their heads and all and everything just beat in. And Stephen was stoned to death, and those stones, you know what they did for him? Took him into the presence of Christ. They didn't hurt him at all. And then they took Paul and they took him out and stoned him one time and left him for dead. And he just got up and shook himself and went on his way. Went on his way. And I tell you what, he was in league with them. God can take stones and turn them into bread for his children. And I know this, for the traveler, for the pilgrim going through this world, nothing's going to obstruct their journey. Stones, beasts, nothing's going to stop their progress. Whether it's stones in the way or beast, it ain't going to stop them. Make straight paths for his people is what God does. And then he said, we'll have peace and security. Then in verse 24, he says, thou shalt know thy tabernacle shall be in peace. Oh, your home shall be in peace. You'll know peace. There'll be peace in your home. We know, and we know God, and there isn't, and this peace in our home, blessed peace in our homes, in our tabernacles. There'll be peace there. And then you'll visit your habitation. And one of these days, there'll be no sin there. Well, there's no sin there now because of Christ. Because of Christ. And then he said, look what he says in verse 25. And this probably hurt Job very much. He said, thou shalt know also that thy seed shall be great. Job just lost all his children. That probably cut him plumb to the heart. And thine offspring as the grass of the earth. And I tell you what, Job lost his children. But he said, Job, if you'll return to righteousness, you all will be restored. And then he says in verse 26, thou shalt come to thy grave in a full ripe age, come to thy grave in a full age, like a shock of corn cometh in his season. And you know that's what's going to happen. It's like a shock of corn. Look in Mark chapter 4 with me. Look with me in Mark chapter 4. Let's look at this together. Look in verse 26. You know, God perfects his people. He matures his people. And he does it through troubles and trials and afflictions. And when a man gets ripe, he's going to leave this world. Look what he said here in verse 26. Mark 4:26. And he said, so is the kingdom of God, as if a man should cast seed into the ground. And he'll go to sleep and he'll get up night and day. And he'll go out and look and said, after a while that seed springs up and it starts growing. He don't know how it does it, but it does it. For the earth bringeth forth fruit of herself. Now listen to this. First the blade. You put the seed in the ground and a little old bitty tiny blade comes up. And then watch what it says. And then the ear, when it grows up, then there's a big ear comes in it. It's wheat or corn or whatever. And then the full corn in the ear. That full, the ripe corn, then watch what he says. And when the fruit is brought forth, when it's ripe, he said, immediately putteth in the sickle, because the harvest is come. And that's what he says. When you come, you'll come to your grave as a shock full of corn. As a shock full of corn. Now it takes sun, rain, frost. Takes a lot of things to ripen fruit. So it takes frost, sun, rides, winter, summer, spring, fall, all the seasons that goes through this world. We got to go through them spiritually. And so is the character of God's children. You know, I tell you, God's people should prize the chastening of God. God corrects us. That's what he says back there in verse 17. Therefore, despise not the chastening of the Almighty. Don't despise it. Don't despise it. And to despise something is to reject it with loathing, as useless and unprofitable. Slighting is as it's unworthy of notice. And he says, don't despise chastening. God deals with us as sons. Deals with us in love. And it's absolutely necessary to discipline our character and make our character much better. And all it does is wean us from this earthly, temporal life. Earthly, temporal life. God's going to wean us. Ruby used to say all the time, God's weaning me. She got way up in the mid-80s of God's weaning me off this. Kept just, God's ever just every few days, the Lord's weaning me. It's hard to think somebody being way up in the 80s, the Lord's weaning me. But you know, that's weaning us off of this world. You know who we need to wean from more than anything else? Love of self. Self-righteousness and pride. Self-righteousness and pride. And oh my, God's correction and chastening should be pondered. Look what he said in verse 27. Lo, this we have searched it. So it is. Hear it, and know thou it for thy good. He said, we searched this out. And I want you to listen to what he said. Now you hear what I'm telling you. And listen, I want you to know that everything I said, what he's saying here is everything I've talked about, is for your good. Your good. Huh? May we as God's children, upon the origin of all of our trials and all the design for them and the necessity and tendency of how we react to it. You know, I've said this before and I'll keep on saying it because I believe it. This here virus, you know, this virus that's going around and when it serves God's purpose, it come from God. God sent it. God took a lot of people out of this world with it. And he'll probably take a few more with it. And a lot of people get over it. But I tell you this, when it serves God's purpose, it'll go just like it come. They say, where'd that thing go? You remember back years ago when there was this virus going around? That's where it'll happen. That's the way it'll happen. There was a flu in 1918 that killed, I think, 18 or 19 million people all over the world. Just Philadelphia lost half of its population. So, I mean, when God's purpose is done, and what I'm saying is that when God's purpose is done in our lives, when he's through with us, we're going to be like a shock of corn. We're going to go. And whether it's a virus, whether it's a heart attack, whether it's old age, whether it's cancer, what difference does it make? It's the Lord. It's the Lord. And I tell you what, my son, my daughter, whenever I'd whip her, she'd just go round and round and round and round. Let's talk about chastening. I'd get on her and she'd just run all the way around the room. I'd just have to chase her, you know. But when I'd get Doogie, He'd even bring me the belt and just stand there and say, okay, Dad. I'd kill me. You know, he'd say, okay, Dad, I know I got it coming. And wouldn't you like to be that way when the Lord puts it on you? Lord, I got it coming. Go ahead. I got it coming. Don't run around in circles. Just stand and take it.